You're on.
We will call the Gage County Board of Supervisors meeting to order for Wednesday, May 4th, 2022 at 8:45 on the clock. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Open Meetings Act is on the wall to my left, attendance for observation. Juergens, Haxby, Schuler, Tiemann, Dorn, and Lytle. Up first, the consent agenda. Approve the general agenda. Approve the minutes of the meeting held April 20th, 2022. Approve all claims through May 4th, 2022 in the amount of $532,294.19. Accept claim number 220500992, to Hard Rock Quarries LLC in the amount of $5,067.47. And claim number 220501.02 to RL Team and Construction, Inc. in the amount of $26,984.74 to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approved utility permit number 1243. To the Lower Big Blue NRD, NRD will be adding a new meter service to parcels. NRD will bore a 2-inch diameter by 6-foot deep continuous bore for new water meter service at the intersection of South 10th and Walnut Road, located in the northeast quarter section 26, southeast quarter section 23, township 1 north, range 6 east, Paddock Township. Approved utility permit number 1244 to Windstream of Nebraska, LLC. Windstream will be placing new fiber line for a business. Windstream will start a 2-inch diameter by 60-inch deep bore in the village of Cortland to take care of the village will take care of the village permits and continue south with the bore down South 12th Road to the north side of Ash Road. Windstream will then bore west to NDOT right-of-way, NDOT permitting, and cross under Highway 77 to the West Grader Ditch. Turn and continue south with bore for approximately 2,000 feet. Once bore gets to the west side of Treads Central in the West Grader Ditch of Highway 77, Windstream will then turn the bore east and bore under Highway 77 to the East Grader Ditch and place new pedestal and continue work on private property. Project is located in the southwest quarter section 12, southeast quarter section 11, northeast quarter section 14, northwest quarter section 13, township 6 north, range 6 east, Highland Township. Approve receiving and placing on file the Cortland Volunteer Fire and Rescue 2021 annual report. Approve chairman signing the 2022 ballot for election of Nebraska Regional Interoperability Network INRIN Board of Directors for Chad Cordy. Approve district court summary fee report and register of deeds fee report for the month of April 2022.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Dorn, second by Schuler. Any discussion on any of the items on the consent agenda? Seeing none, I'd ask you to please vote. 6 in favor, motion carries. Up next is the regular agenda. Approve or disapprove claim number 220500099 to Hard Rock Quarries LLC in the amount of $5,067.47 and claim number 220500102 to RL Team and Construction, Inc. in the amount of $26,984.74. With these claims, it would bring the total amount of claims approved through May 4th, 2022 to $564,346.40. Both of these companies I'm involved with personally.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Juergens, second by Dorn. Any discussion?
Looks like you're covering not doing the mowing job, huh?
Making up for crumbs somewhere, I guess. All right. If no further helpful input, please vote. 5 in favor, with Tiemann abstaining, motion carries. comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. I know we have Mr. Anderson that wants to speak. Mr. Schuler has something quick, too.
Yes, if I may go.
You bet.
Well, the recent recall attempt failed. The reasons given for this recall consisted mainly of partisan personal agendas related to national issues and unrelated to Gage County business. It's my opinion that elected officials should stay focused on county business. As a representative of my district, it is my job to consider everyone and not just the vocal few. While I'm personally pleased that the recall effort failed, I remain deeply concerned about the lies that were told about me, that I went door to door to stop it, and that I tried to intimidate residents in my district and more. My votes and actions are consistent with the scope of the supervisor's duties. I personally pledge to continue to serve my constituents with integrity, to fulfill my role as their county supervisor faithfully, and remain grateful for their enduring confidence in me.
Thank you, Mr. Schuler. Comments from the public in the audience? Mr. Anderson, would you give your name and address for the record, please?
Thank you. David Anderson, 42401 Southwest 61st Odell Road, Odell, Nebraska, 68415. That's quite an address, by the way. Glad to be here, Mr. Chairman, board members. I come to speak on a couple of different issues, actually comment, hopefully not too long. I talked to Eric earlier. I thought 5-6 minutes should take care of it, so I don't want to bore you. The first issue I have is a pretty specific road issue, and then secondly, I'd like to make some just general comments about kind of the board and general political scene with election coming. So thank you for this opportunity. The Odell Road that runs from Odell up to 136 is a 12-mile stretch of asphalt that has been in deteriorating condition for quite a long time. And I truly understand that you just have not had the money to do a complete overlay of that stretch of road, you know, due to the Beatrix and budget issues. So it's not that I'm asking for the moon. But the reason I'm here is that there's just really been an ongoing lack of general maintenance that could have been done at lower cost, certainly a lot less than an overlay. The south 6 miles, just north of Odell up to the PWF, that was a federal aid project that Ian Gronewald and I worked on pretty hard, and that was kind of the first resurfacing project that we did in the county, and it was structured pretty well. It was, again, a federal aid project done to federal specs. So that's held up pretty well, except for the culverts. There were a number of culverts that were put in. They all continue sinking, and they've been in that condition for so many years, and I've complained on and on, mostly to Galen. Probably I haven't complained enough directly to Terry, but they're just plain terrible. If you're pulling a vehicle with a trailer, the trailer actually will leave Earth, and when it comes down from space, there are tire skid marks, so you can drive that road most any time and see at each of those culvert spots tire skid marks where spinning tires hit back on the road. And if you're pulling like a seed tender, it'll actually buck you right out of the seat of the pickup that you're pulling it with. And they've been that way for long enough time that they should have been addressed. The north 6 miles has a little different issue. That seems to have, that's a different kind of territory, so there are fewer culverts, but there are a lot of cross cracks. And while the county road department has really been big on tarring cracks in the early spring, it really doesn't cure the issue. Every place there's a cross crack, and that's almost every 100 or 200 feet, there's a place where the road is actually cancered out. By that I mean it's not just a crack. It's the water damage has sunken the road 2 or 3 inches. Sometimes the cross cracks are 1 foot or 2 feet wide. And if you try to take a vehicle on that road, even with good suspension, it gives you quite a ride. And I visited with a number of farmers who would like to travel that road with, like, non-suspension vehicles, like tractors. And it is a horrible ride. This past winter had cause to drive a tractor up to Beatrice for repair, and it was the darndest thing I'd ever experienced. Finally, a couple things, that there's a lack of shoulders on that road, and I understand the county has a policy that when you do overlays, you tend to do a little more shouldering. But again, bless his heart, Ian Gronewald started this back in the Adams area, and then I followed up in the Odell area back in the day of getting farmers to voluntarily give up dirt from their fence row, which often is built up over time, and move that dirt at no cost for buying the dirt, at least, to the county, and moving that over and putting shoulders on the road. As I would mention that this Odell North Road carries between 500 and 700 vehicles a day and is probably the most heavily traveled stretch of road in Gage County of that length. Now, I understand North 19th has about that much traffic and some others, but that's a very important road for people in Odell, and so many Kansas people also take that road. While we're talking about shoulders, very briefly, there's oftentimes a buildup on the edge of the road from wintertime sanding that goes on, from just natural buildup of collection of dust by the grass, and there's many places on that road where the water can't even get off the blacktop, and so the water sits there oftentimes after rain. Particularly, there's a spot right in Odell by south of the elevator that I understand is part of the county road system that holds the water sometimes for 2 days after rain, because and that could be simply rectified by just running a maintainer down the road and kicking that edge off. And we used to do that routinely on virtually all of the roads. And finally, as far as the road, the village of Odell has been trying for years, and I've worked with them on that, to get the state highway department on Highway 8 to put in a turn lane so it'd be safer, because the elevator now hauls everything. With no railroad, they haul everything down basically to Hanover. Since the school consolidation, there's tremendous number of kids and school buses that turn on from 61st Odell Road onto Highway 8, and it's a terribly dangerous intersection. And actually, the intersection up on 136 isn't a whole lot better. So that's the end of my comments on the road. And probably eating up more time, because I've added in a couple extra comments. I did have this time down pretty well. The next comment's a concern. It's my general concern in the local area of radical right-wing populist politics pressuring people like you on the board, certainly the pressuring the city council. The mayor's race is very obvious of this. And even in the school systems, I'm hearing complaints of just right-wing input, which is fair game. Good Lord knows it's politics, but there's a lot of push in this direction. My concern is that given my experience, and some of you know, some of you don't, I had 16 years on this county board, 11 as chairman, 5 as road and bridge chairman, went on to run the chairs at NACO. I've also spent time on the Nebraska Rural Development Commission, ethanol board, and others. So I'm making these comments from a little bit of, I guess, experience, and I hope you would at least take them under considerations. Looks to me like on many issues, this board collectively, and I know some of you are more promoters, some of you are go-alongers, and that's typical of boards, but some of the quick issues that have concerned me and the people that I visit with is your general anti-opinion to renewable energy. Now, obviously, the windmill project in the north was probably a lousy location. I totally understand it, but to go extreme and basically kill renewable energy in the whole county probably was not the best way to go. Also, the lack of support for county offices during the COVID epidemic, I think, was evident. Maybe you guys weren't even realizing it, but offhand comments about, oh, I don't know if the masks work, or vaccination's a joke, or those kind of things that got passed along were not supportive of people like the clerk and the treasurer and other officers in the county here, courthouse, who had to face people every day, nose to nose. And also a general anti-federal government attitude. And you guys know the issues, whether it be the 30-30 that the governor's all riled up about, conservation, joint government programs with other government entities. There's just been a lack of support. Some of it has been quietness, but certainly not a forward-looking position, in my opinion. And seems to me that, as has been mentioned out, that there's just been an awful lot of time and energy put in on federal issues, not necessarily county board issues. And the one that really comes to mind is a preoccupation of the Second Amendment resolution that you guys spent a lot of time on. I understand one of the versions even specified that the county sheriff, and one comment was go Gus, would have authority even over federal officials that might wander into the county. And from experience, I'll tell you this one short story before I end. Back in the 1970s, I was very active in a group called the American Agriculture Movement. I personally led four or five groups to Washington, D.C. to lobby. Well, it started out as a pretty decent protest movement due to low prices and so on. As it ended up, it got more and more radical, more and more anti-Jewish, more and more anti-federal government, and even local people. It got so bad I had to drop my leadership role in it because there were county people that one even ended up in jail because of his anti-federal government, anti-federal income tax position. But I'm kind of cautioning the board to not be you're not necessarily supportive, but you're not saying anything against this kind of thing, and you have this general attitude that federal government is infringing on your rights. Well, keep in mind that this attitude in the 1970s led to the Posse Comitatus movement. That might even be a new name for you, but that was a spinoff of some of the hearing comments you heard about the sheriff, that you should not only be allowed to have guns, that you as individuals should wear guns, and that the county sheriff has immense power, and that that this should override any federal influence in your county. Gentlemen, ladies, that ended up to the federal building in Oklahoma City being bombed back in the late 70s, early 80s, and that was a direct spin-off of that Posse Comitatus anti-federal government movement. And I see it reoccurring just almost, some of the wording is exactly from some of the publications that I had seen as a young man back in the 70s. So with that, the general decorum, I think, bothers me a little bit. This recent recall on Mr. Shuler, I mean, that was uncalled for and a juvenile movement politically, I would say. Probably the one that I just learned of not too far ago is one of you county board members actually has a Let's Go Brandon, which is AKA for FUCK, the president of the USA, we all know that, but displayed proudly on her farm property, and we all have aerial view pictures of that. So I just caution the board. I'm not going to warn you. It's not my position to warn you, but I would caution you from my experience. Please don't go too far down that rabbit hole, because what you do collectively, locally, does matter. And I know I went over time a bit, but thank you so much. I appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Anyone else have any public comment? Seeing none, we'll go into more mundane business. Committee reports, building and ground, winter lights. Good morning, Mr. Jones.
Good morning. We brought up, I'm still working on several proposals that I have not had any forward progress on, but I'm going to try real hard to start pushing these harder to get some proposals for you here soon. I did get a estimate on our east ramp entrance, the lower level, on installing a slider door instead of our double glass doors down there. We've always had trouble with wind issues, and that came in at $14,757, and we would it would require a header over the top of that, so I'm going to get a bid on that also, but this could be something that we could move. It wouldn't have to be connected with replacing the concrete on the ramp and the heating system. This could be a standalone project all by itself, so I'm going to see what that would come in at to kind of modify that door opening to remove that center support in there. The north opening, we're getting close on that. I talked to Sean Van Lanningham and Midwest Sprinkler. They're going to go ahead and do the sprinkler testing in May and removing the two sprinkler heads that are outside of that in the shed area so we can tear that shed down. Sprinkler systems, I have not been able. Luckily, we got the rain when we did. Our lawn was really getting dry, and I found out our control box is not working, so they're going to replace that. And lastly, engineer controls came down, and we do need a new controller on our geothermal pump system, so they are going to get back to me with a proposal on that.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Jones? Thank you, sir. Equalization, farm ground stable, residential going up. Looks like residential acreage is going up quite a bit, and valuations will go out the end of the month. Finance and insurance, Mr. Juergens.
Large ticket items. Jones Automotive Incorporated, Sheriff's Vehicle Change, $12,919.73. Beatrice Concrete, Sand and Gravel, Rock and Gravel, $26,569.82. RL Team and Construction, Gravel and Hauling, $26,984.74.
Thank you, Mr. Juergens. Human Resources, Employee Relations, we really haven't had anything lately. Law Enforcement, Emergency Management. The Sheriff, do you have anything for us today, Sheriff?
Just a couple items. First, we discussed Monday on the bridge contracts being canceled for everybody because they can't find help to take care of the facility. So basically, in short, that means is these people we took up there for civil protective custody more than likely will end up in our jail or jails across the state until they figure out a better way of doing it. So that will be a little interesting kind of to deal with that and those folks with their special needs at that time. Second thing was the city reached out to me yesterday to just touch base, let me know on the open house they have next Monday on the Lincoln Project. Lincoln Street Project. It's at Lincoln School, Elementary School, from 4:30 to 6:30. It's an open house. Basically, what's going to affect us here is they're going to take this from three lanes to two lanes at this intersection. And the crosswalk can be removed from here, and the crosswalk is going to go across at the other end of the block. That's the main thing for right here, and they just wanted me to get a heads up on that so we'd know.
Are you all right with that moving your crosswalk?
Well, I don't need much about it. I mean, it's just a matter of we take most of our prisoners over by van anyway. If we have to, we'll just walk that block across. We're still going to have to walk the same distance as long as we got it marked clearly. Concern rate at the intersection like that and the speed they do topping that hill. Now at least I can walk out and give them a half block notice to start braking. There it's going to be pretty close, but we'll see how it goes. But that's there for anybody to go and I guess look at the maps and talk to them, see what's going on. So. And that's about all I got right here, right now.
Okay. Questions for the sheriff? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Lisa's letting us go. All right. Road and Bridge, Mr. Juergens, you're up again.
A little bit short this time. armor coating will be starting this month. Our LRM gravel plant is making gravel and should work out fine. As Mark reported, he took samples. And the last one, which I don't really care how you worded this or like how you worded this, but 15 out of 96 townships have gravel. Now, so I can go backwards, we're that far behind. So, and the last 2 years, 15 townships are complete, and we're continuing to work on those to get caught up. We had a bad year last year, but we will continue. Mark said he'd be done by July with something. Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir. Is Pam coming over?
No.
Pam Van Landingham, we wanted to thank her for 18 years of service. She started in December of 4 and April 28th of 2022. Pam ran the jail here at the end of her career, and I actually really enjoyed working with her as there was a transition from Tony to her. The sheriff always thinks we spend too much money at the jail and at the sheriff's department. Well, Pam wielded that back right away. She looked at things very similar to the way I did, and it was as needed. Very fiscally responsible in purchases at the jail. We still had everything we needed, but we didn't go overboard on anything. So it really was a pleasure working back and forth with her as things did come up, or as she updated us on the happenings at the jail. But unfortunately, she's not here today. But from the board, and I don't know if anyone else wants to say anything, from the board publicly, I'd really like to thank Ms. Van Langham for her years of service, her dedication, and her care for the county. That was a pleasure to see and a pleasure to get to work with one-on-one as she moved into that role. Sheriff, do you have anything you'd like to say about Pam or anything you want to bring up?
Oh, nothing I can do publicly here probably that I can say about I'd agree with Eric. Pam came in and took over the reins when I had Lieutenant Shepherdson head out. She was very responsible with the funds. She knew the things we have to have to get us by. One of the things we always strive to do was have more and more video recordings throughout the jail, and she understood that, and we ever so often try to keep that up because things happen, and without something being recorded, it didn't happen, you know. So that's helped us a few times on different litigations we've had. So she was a hard worker. She, as time went on, when she gave me notice she's leaving, it got shorter and shorter because she was getting tired of it. So she left a little sooner than she planned on, but she did want to thank the board, but she just is not a person to come over here and stand here and talk about things. But she did do us a good job, and we had a little going away for her here, I think, last week. A little meal there for her, and shook hands and thanked them, and out the door she went. So.
And she did work with Trevor, took him under wing and worked him in. And
Trevor stepped up, and he's about tight with the money as she was, so he knows what needs to be done. He's very, very qualified and very good young man, so I think he'll do a good job for us there as well. So.
Tough position, but she did a very good
tough.
Job.
Especially with that those contracts on bridge being gone, that's going to make a difference for us, I'm sure. So, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff. Up next, Mr. Fossler. Lawrence has been with the county from 2014 to 2022. Lawrence Fonzie is also the blade operator right in front of my house. Looks like you got everything taken care of right after the rain yesterday, so thank you for that. A lot of years of service. We have a lot of experience at the highway department. You've been through three superintendents, would that be right? Or worked under three superintendents? Just the two? I didn't know if you were under Marlin or not. Gotcha. But we have a plaque for you. Like I say, there's a lot of ways to say thank you. Usually if you hear no news, that's the board saying thank you because there's not complaining. But Mr. Juergens does have a plaque for you, and I don't know if you want to come up and say anything.
No, I just appreciated the opportunity to work here.
Appreciated the opportunity to work for the county, and whoever takes my place, they're going to have a rude awakening of all the people that knew me. So they'll be number one a lot of times. So.
Well, you guys are on the front line all the time because we aren't out there every day. You are right there where the public can get to you.
We're number one a lot of times.
Lawrence, on behalf of the county, I'd like to present you with this plaque for your years of service to Gage County. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
One other comment I'd like to make. Since Lawrence took over in that area, he's had probably that area most. I've had a lot of compliments about the roads in that area. So I appreciate that. Yep. You did a good job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence. Derek, and also up next, Eric Dowell, Engage Direct, Executive Director, to present the quarterly report. We have board member Chad Lottman here to keep an eye on everything. Derek, of course, is our new Executive Director for Engage after Trevor Lee left. We're excited to see how you do. The board's taken special interest just to try to make sure there's good relations and a good transition, and it looks like everything is working just in a stellar fashion. So I'll turn it over to you two.
Yeah. So I'm Chad Lottman, Vice President of the Engage Board. Eric just did most of my work because I was simply here to introduce Derek. And he's got a couple pamphlets we won't necessarily talk about here. We'll highlight a couple items. In case you hadn't caught, Trevor Lee, our previous director, had announced that he would be leaving his post effective March 31st to pursue an opportunity in Kearney. He has remained on as an hourly employee to assist us. Derek's first day was just Monday of this week, so Trevor was a help in helping maintain the transition to get us to this point. Obviously, the executive committee immediately began a search for our next executive director. We did have several potential candidates that were vetted in February and March, multiple interviews and engaging multiple major vendors, employers. The Engage Board unanimously voted to extend the offer to Derek of York, Nebraska. As I said, he's just started here on the May 2nd. But that said, Derek, I'll let you say a couple words. Tell them about yourself.
So, welcome, or thanks for having me today. Happy to be here. I come from York County, Nebraska, born and raised. Went to the university, spent some time outside of Nebraska working in Indianapolis and Maine, and then in just outside of Chicago as well for a time, and then found my way back to York. And then, you know, through a number of ways, found my way to economic development. Been in the industry for almost 4 years now, working on my certificate to become an certified economic developer. Think of that as like a bar exam that a lawyer would have to go through. I have to go through a similar practoral exam to certify myself in economic development. So looking forward to going through that process here in the next year and looking forward to working at Gage County and helping improve what I can. And just first off, yeah, just learning a lot about the community and what's going on and everything like that. But very excited about getting out the opportunity to work here in Gage County.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. A couple points we'll make on member renewals in our third quarter. Engage staff completed our member investor renewals for 22. With 44 business have invested in the organization. This is in addition to Gage County, City Beatrice, and the villages of Adam and Cortland. The Schwarzkopf Industrial Site, which Gage County Industrial Park. Engage secured the site, secured this site at the end of quarter two. In quarter three, Engage applied for and received a Section 128A Phase 1 environmental survey through the Nebraska Department of Environment and Energy. Using the member funds, Engage completed a conceptual rail design to serve the site using the city BNSF right-of-way. So that was a big item for us in the last couple quarters. And then another big item is Communities for Kids. C4K is an item that Derek has a lot of experience with coming from York. I'll let him report on how we've done and his experience there.
Yeah, so currently in the process of the beginning process of Communities for Kids. If you're not familiar with that, Communities for Kids is a partnership with communities and private entities to support and coordinate planning and access to childcare. It's community-driven with Communities for Kids coming in to kind of help facilitate, with Engage being the grant recipient. We are also going to kind of be there to kind of help facilitate that process and everything in that nature. Like I said, the initiative is community-based engagement process designed to assist in the development of right-sized solutions for communities selected to participate in the program. And that's very important. There is no silver bullet when it comes to child care. There's no one-size-fits-all for communities. What works for York may not work here, but there is a lot of experience I bring over with just helping the planning portion and just getting the community, you know, organized to come up with those solutions. And so right now we're in that first process of getting information out from the community in the form of a survey. So if you haven't seen that, the survey information is in that packet. So I would encourage you to share that information with anyone that you know that maybe hasn't taken it, or take it yourself. But it's very important that we get as many responses as we can, so that way we have a very good capture of what's going on in the community, so that way the right solutions can be offered and found and everything like that. So we're very excited about this. We're hoping to wrap up the survey here in May, so we're going to make a one last kind of final push here through May to try and get more people to kind of take that. I believe we have just over 300 responses right now. We'd like to be over 700, so we got quite a bit of a little push to go through here, but in May. I do believe, yeah, we can get to those numbers. So I'm very excited to see where C4K kind of moves forward in that aspect.
That was really the only items we had to touch on. You had some pamphlets we handed out. Is there any questions you have for either of us? Otherwise, that's all we have.
I'd encourage you guys, as you have time, to try to stop down and talk to Derek, get to know him. Being new to the community, it'd be great for him to put names with faces. I'm excited. York has some programs that I'd love to see implemented here, and as the interview process went along, Derek talked about working on some of that. Chad talked about 44 business members already renewed, but York has a huge private membership portion of their budget and their organization, and I think some of those things could be brought into the Gage County area growth. So we're excited to see what you do, and we thank you both for coming.
All right. Thank you. We appreciate the support of the county for Engage.
Thanks for taking time out of your day, too, Chad.
Have a good day.
Welcome, Derek.
Thank you. Take care.
Up next, approve or disapprove 23 CB0512 grant award and grant sub A award, authorizing the chairman to sign.
Chairman, I move to place the quarterly report of Engage
file. We have a motion by Lytle.
Second.
Second by Dorn to place the quarterly report on file from Engage. Any discussion? Please vote. 6 in favor, 5 in favor. She back there?
Yep.
5 in favor, motion carries. Okay, now approve or disapprove the signing the grant awards. These are two grants, community-based juvenile service aid sub-award and the state grant award for diversion.
And not for diversion.
Not for diversion.
Diversion is a part of it, but it's just...
That's just a portion of these. Christina, do you want to go over anything specifically with us on these?
Applied for these grants in December, I think. I was here in December and was approved to apply for both of these grants. Since then, we were granted the funds, and then we had to merge both of those grants together, so they are now just one grant. And now we are going through the award process. What this funds is, a part of it is juvenile diversion. We also fund family support services for kids who need them here in our county, or for families who need them here in our county. Alternatives to detention, I think Roger talked about that a little bit last time when I was here, when Ashley and Chris Reese were here. Ashley Greason and Chris Reese were here. That's a part of probation, and those are kids who would go to detention services, which is like $400 a night last time I checked. But we are able to keep them here in the county because of these dollars or these funding dollars that pay for electronic monitoring, tracker services, again, family support, and whatever else we can do to keep them in their home if that's appropriate. There's about $4,500 that goes into Gitche County Maps as a part of the grant writing, coordination, that type of thing. And then about $14,698 that goes to the Gitche County Truancy Program. So that's the breakdown. Do any of you have any questions?
And I know Counselor can't be here for some business today. He would emphasize that these grants pay for this program. The county doesn't contribute any money to any of these programs out of direct property tax values at this time. That may change moving forward, but at this time, that's something Councilor Harris has always emphasized. These are covered by the grant applications that Christina puts in, and most of that runs through the Crime Commission, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So it's a savings to our legal system because we're not prosecuting or trying to process all these individuals, and hopefully giving them a foot up, too, instead of going and sitting in the correction facility.
And a benefit to our kids, too, and our families. I can't emphasize that enough. Anytime we can keep a kid out of detention and in our community, although sometimes it's a difficult process, that is much better for the kid.
There was some discussion also on oversight with these grants. Christina sent information to the treasurer, and the treasurer and I talked about that too. The county board has zero oversight over any of these items. We don't have to monitor any of it. That goes through Roger's office and through the Crime Commission and through Christina's offices. The way we understand it, we are simply a pass-through. The money will come into the coffer, and then it's redistributed out. And in all seriousness, Christine is an employee of the attorney and the school system, the way they have it set up. So just for the record, the county has no oversight or financial responsibility in any of these programs either.
Correct.
So that's another item for this. Any discussion from the board? Questions for Christina? If not, I would ask for a motion to approve or disapprove signing the two grant applications, which constitute approximately $90,000.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Dorn, second by Juergens. Any additional discussion? Last chance. Seeing none, please vote. Six in favor. Motion.
You still abstaining?
Six in favor. Motion carries. Thank you, Christina.
Thanks. I'll pick those up later.
Sounds good. Up next, discussion on denied sheriff's department claim for paying out overtime. Paying out vacation for an employee. And I'd ask, this is a policy discussion, so please do not use names in the discussion on this.
I'll just touch base briefly, and then I think Chief Quiles and possibly Investigator Hanton might want to comment on some things. The claim came over to me, denied, and I can't read if this is Don or this is Eric who wrote on here, but I'd like these things to be discussed, at least on committee level, before they're denied. There's a lot of things here that come into play in our office that just isn't coming to play anybody else in the county. And this situation happened with Deputy Behrens some time back, and I can understand that one got denied because he came, I think, to the supervisor. It's too late. It's past that time frame, and there was no supporting documentation coming over. Since that time, I think Don and I and Spencer talked once on the phone and indicated it's got to at least come over here prior to maxing out and supporting documentation. Why? Which makes perfectly good sense. So in our work sometimes it's just, I know it's hard for you guys to believe that you just get time off. It's tough. I talked to Roger a little bit. I was hoping he's going to be here today so we could discuss a little more, but his thoughts, a little in line with mine a little bit there, is we set a precedent on this years back with another deputy, and that was for a lot more hours than this, but the policy for the county is what it is. I have more policies than anybody can think about, both from the sheriff's office and correction side. But policies are guidelines only. Believe it or not, they can and are, in my office, changed accordingly if issues come up and I see there is an issue for us. And it's what's best for the office is how I'll omit them, I'll go ahead and revise them, whatever it's going to take on that to make it work if I think it's in the best interest of us. I like to see the officials do the same thing with our policies in the county if it comes up. Probably never going to come up except for us, like it always does. But it is concerning. I need consistency on it, so I try to give the staff as well on it. I'm going to have the chief deputy step over right now. I know if you want to come up here, chief. If Tim wants to say a few words on it as well, but I want to make sure our voice is heard on this as to why this happened.
I'll say too, you guys aren't. This isn't specific to you. This is very common throughout the county to hit the end of allowed hours on vacation. It's actually not uncommon. It's uncommon to hit it and not take, but we see it at each office because each office will tell us, well, we can't have the people gone. So, I mean, that's the common one is we can't have the people gone. We can't be – they don't have time to take off. That's the common denominator through most of the offices that we see being you guys in the highway department primarily, I would say. But
I would say probably you're right, yeah.
Not to interrupt you, Chief. I just thought I'd get that in before you got started.
I was asked to be here by the sheriff and prepare some information, some supporting documents, just to kind of, I guess, argue our point, if you will. So a little bit of background on here. So this vacation claim that we're talking about here is – do you have that, Sheriff? So, and I can pass this around as well, I mean, so everybody can see it here. So – what this kind of started off as, and there's you'll see two of our what we call vacation slips or requests that were submitted. One was for 8 hours, and one was for 4 hours, for a total of 12 hours. So these were submitted on the 25th of April, and the dates requested were the 27th and 28th of April. So. That's kind of the facts leading up to it. Those claims ultimately, so when we submit those slips, is what I meant to say, that those go to a supervisor, and in this case that I'm the immediate supervisor. So we either approve or we deny those requests, just like probably any supervisor in any other office does. So I had typed a short narrative here of the sheriff to the sheriff why I denied those claims, and submitted that to the sheriff, and then he ultimately also approved my letter, denied the request. So I'll pass that around as for the reference. So vacation requests that are submitted, you know, sometimes they are denied, and that's just part of it. Now, it doesn't happen very often, and, you know, we bend over backwards to try and accommodate the people so that, you know, if they're bumping up against that 240-hour cap on there, you know, that we can try and make everything we do work to get it done, but sometimes it's just not practical or feasible to make it happen. So in this particular instance, that's the case. There was other duties that had to do with short staffing, FTO, and some other mandated things that we had a timeline to get completed prior to the end of the month that we had to get completed, and that's the reason, you know, why that request was denied. The one thing, I guess, for clarification, you know, is to what is the actual process? You know, there's not a lot of guidance in state statute. Nebraska Revised Statute 23-135 talks about the process, you know, which a claim can be denied, or if a claim is denied, and then the recourse and process, you know, on how that works. And that's what this is here. And I guess so for clarification, so we have to be able to explain it to the individual, to the employee, if you will, on what the process is. If you would be able to just shed some light on how that process actually works, If it requires a board member signature, finance committee, a full board, board action, that's something that we would like to be able to pass on if we could get some guidance on that.
Please correct me if I'm wrong on this, Don, because we don't deal with this a whole lot on claim denials. Usually we'll start out in finance committee. Like this one went through the committee process on Monday. We talked about it briefly. I signed on that one and denied it because it was against our policy. If you would want something brought back, I think the first step would be talk to me. If I tell you to go pound sand, anything can be put on the agenda through three board members overrule the chair. Is that correct? I think three board members can overrule my opinion to put something on the agenda for discussion, things like that. We haven't ever had to do that, I guess. In finance, we generally talk about things. That one, you guys are a little different because you're on a separate contract than everyone else. The goal is always to treat everyone as fairly across the county as possible. This isn't uncommon to come up at the end if somebody is maxed out on all their vacation or benefit hours. You guys, I mean, as a county, we give a lot of benefit hours, a lot. You guys take that to the next level and get even additional benefit hours and an additional, I guess I don't know what the right term for it would be, but your benefits,
holiday pay and things.
Holiday pay, your benefits package is larger than the others, but it still functions relatively the same. Your employees, the Sheriff's Department employees packages, larger than the other county employees, but it still functions the same. We have caps in place. A lot of those caps are signed for in your contract. I don't know if these are spelled out specifically in your contract where there will be X number of PTO hours, vacation hours, things like that. Mm-hmm. If they are, there's no discussion even. If they aren't, then that becomes a discussion item. Where the issue comes in is management. It's not we're out of people, we're out of this or that. It's forethought and management of those employees and putting them in a spot where we've managed in a problem instead of managed out a problem, I guess would be my thought. We don't know the inner workings of your department. That's between you and Sheriff. But I would see that probably being where this issue arose is the management of time. And if we got to the very end and somebody's maxed out, you're going to go over, you're going to lose hours. I mean, this is my opinion. I mean, I just, you don't gain hours. I'm sorry. You don't lose any hours. You cease to gain additional benefit hours.
Correct.
And that's countywide. As far as if the board would want to make a change on something like that, I've told the board it's never going to hurt my feelings if you guys don't agree with an opinion I have on something.
True. We just want to maybe get clarification. So maybe today is a good opportunity to get that done and it can be spelled out. I have some highlights that I'd like to point out here. So in the county handbook under page 35, it's the vacation leave policy. I guess so we can, if you will, argue the point contrary to what it says, or in this case, the lack of what it says. There's nowhere in the policy does it say, in the county handbook I'm referring to here on page 35, nowhere does it say that or does it prohibit being paid out in lieu of using vacation leave. Under Gage County Sheriff's Office policy, nowhere does it also prohibit the same. Past practice. Previously, as the sheriff pointed out, we had paid out an employee. It was for, I can't remember, it was quite some years ago, but for a significant amount. I'm talking probably like a couple weeks of vacation, if I recall, at that point. So There's a train of thought on that, I guess, that vacation is capped out at 240 hours. So, and it's not going to fall with every employee, but almost every employee. If we were to pay the individual for any vacation, whatever those numbers of hours could be, 5 hours or 100, it's whatever. The amount of money that we would save by that is significant, because if somebody takes a vacation day, we'll call it, we have to hire overtime for that entire shift. Typically, that's a 12-hour shift. So in this case, you know, if you hire somebody for 12 hours overtime, it would be cheaper just to pay them, you know, their regular rate or hourly rate for those amount of hours that they would like to be taken as pay rather than actually use the vacation. So that might be something to consider, you know, when everything ends up being about the bottom line and the dollar at the end of the year and throughout the budget year. You know, that might be something to have for discussion and consideration, to where it is an option or put into the policy, if you will, or the county handbook. Our conundrum at times is that we have a county handbook that we're expected or required to follow. We have a sheriff's office policy that we're expected to follow. And then we have an FOP contract for our contract members that we have to be able to go through three different sources and research them all to make sure that one conflicts with the other. Well, do we follow the contract, what the contract says? Do we go to the handbook? Do we follow our policy? So some of those things kind of get a little bit messy at times when we have to be able to come up with the right decision and manage that, as you say.
Along with that, Chief, I have a question for you. Part of the reason that you guys have such a large benefits package is the stress of the job, things like that. I agree with you. I don't take my vacation. I don't like being gone. If we have an employee that's not taking vacation and we would change the policy to where we would pay out instead of letting them accrue additional benefit, do you not see the need for them to be off the job and away from the job?
Well, I think that's a pretty loaded question.
Well, I mean, it's a tough one. I'm sorry, and I don't mean to try to steer you in.
Well, I'll tell you my honest opinion is of course they need time off. What I'm referring to is I'm not suggesting by any means that people say, oh, well, I'll just take all my vacation and pay. I think that there should be some discussion on that, to where there's reasonable limits perhaps posed on that, so that if we get into a situation to where they are bumping against the top end, that maybe they're allowed to take a portion of that, or, you know, half of it. I don't know what the magic number is, but I think there should be some option in there rather than have them, you know, if you want to call it lose it or not accumulate it, either way, that it would give them the option then that they have a small cushion or a window in there. We can afford the luxury of a little bit more time to address the issue with staffing, and then we can come to a good conclusion. You know, it's like, well, we can probably give you X number of days and get covered for that, but maybe we can't for these two. You know, you have the option if you want maybe then to be paid for those two, and that way you wouldn't lose any and that type of thing, or not accumulate any more. That's what I'm suggesting. So going on just a little further, the sheriff kind of, you know, he had touched on this, and that's under the county handbook, page 6, under intent and purpose. And that kind of falls to probably, you know, more than just this discussion, I would imagine. But basically, in there, it gives the discussion for a couple things. But it's really just one main paragraph that it deals with. And it talks about in there with the elected official. And, well, it starts off with the county board / elected official. And it talks about in there that and I'll just read this quick excerpt from here. The county board / elected official retains the right to modify or abolish these policies, procedures, and benefits, and reserves the right to adopt new policies, procedures, and benefits. And I understand there needs to be some overall consistency and cohesiveness, you know, when it comes to things of benefits and that nature. What I don't understand is that if that's what it says and that was the intent and the purpose behind paying out an employee for their vacation, you know, why that is denied.
That one, I would say that goes, especially with you guys dealing with the FOP, you're talking about an additional benefits, additional above and beyond the contract benefits, which when we've talked to our labor attorney, which is our representative when we talk with sure. the FOP, we are specifically told we do not give less and we do not give more than what the contract has said. We can actually fall in default by giving additional benefits to the FOP also. If you were another department, if you were the road department, clerk's office, it would be a lot easier for us to change that. But with any member, now you don't fall under the FOP contract, it would be easier for us to say chief had to do this and it's outside of his job, you know, something like that. With the parties that we're talking about here, with them being under the FOP contract, I mean, the rigidity there goes up exponentially because there is a specific benefit package. As soon as we would extend any of those benefits or give additional hours or give bonus vacation, what we've done is we've shorted every other employee then that, well, why don't we get the option at that as well? I tend to agree with you as far as working in lieu of vacation and saving that overtime and not bringing an outside person in. But falling under an FOP contract or a union contract, our hands are tied even more in this situation.
True, and I suppose that's an appropriate discussion for somebody with more legal ease than myself or
either of us.
But at the same time, I think that discussion needs to be had so there is some clarification. So when it comes to this, because it'll come up again, I'm sure, at some point, you know, over the next course of months or years, I would just like to be prepared, you know, from an administrative standpoint, so that we're making the right decision and we have some more guidance other than just, well, it doesn't say we can't, so I guess we can, and then we make an assumption and then it's refused or denied and then comes back. So that is really the intent of this discussion, I guess, is to get that clarification. And in my opinion, if it doesn't say you can't, then you should be able to. That's how we kind of look at this, you know, from we provide, you know, our guidance is provided by law, statute, policies, things of that when we make our decisions. So if we don't have that, then it makes it more difficult for us to be able to do that.
And I apologize to the board. I've kind of monopolized this on our side. Do any of you have any questions or comments for the chief or sheriff on this specifically, or Mr. Lytle?
Eric, I don't know that it's so much questions as it is comments, I suppose. Personally, I think as a board, I think we do need to take a little bit more time, and I think there needs to be more discussion on this. I do think that we need to consult Pigsley on it and have a couple of questions answered. I do have some concern. I've managed people for quite a few years. I do have personal feeling that as vacation is earned, the individuals are given that so that they can take time off, and when they request it, you better have a good reason not to approve it so that they can take the vacation as they want, when they want. Now, referring to Doug and Gus as far as their denial, I don't have to, my job does not involve the keeping the security and the safety of our county. So for me to judge denying this claim is I'm not. But what I do want to say is that when vacation requests are put out there, we better go to every extent to find a way to make sure that that person is granted the right to take that vacation and not get put in this position. Now, the other state thing I'm going to say about vacation time is that individuals know what they have for vacation time. They know what they have for responsibilities. Waiting till the last week or month to take some of that vacation so that they don't run up against this limit is also a little bit, I'm not going to say irresponsible.
They have some responsibility as well. We agree and understand that.
Exactly. Do I think that there's instances where we have management that doesn't approve vacation and then that puts a person in a spot where maybe a situation like this is something that you would pay out on? Possibly.
And Gary makes a good point. I mean, this is, you guys are in a different situation than anyone else. Once again, that's the common denominator each time we talk to an office. Every office is different. You guys have a completely different responsibility. But, I mean, like Gary says, when you get up to the end, I accrue vacation too. I never look to see what I have because I don't care. I'm going, and once I bump, it sits there. And my vacation is knowing that I don't have to fix the problems when I get back. So that's – I mean, it's – but you do stop accruing, and that's something I've learned once we were in the government side of things. It's, you have some employees that it's all about the job. You have some employees where it's more self-motivated how things are going. Their motivations are different, and how they look at pay and benefits is completely different too. So, I mean, that's a personal choice for the employee. And I'm not saying either one's right or wrong, because
no, I think it's also important to note that, you know, both as a benefit and, you know, then as something that creates also a problem, is that we encourage and want our employees to stay longer. And as they do, then they accumulate and get more vacation.
It's a good thing.
Which also, then, of course it's a good thing. And then it compounds the problem then of scheduling additional time off and expense and things to deal with. So, you know, the longer people stay, the more they get, then it creates, you know, more time that we have to cover. So it is both a blessing and a curse, if you will, at the same time.
And we don't mean to be in an adversarial role either. And because when you start looking at policies, sometimes when you look at them in black and white, it looks like there's a lack of appreciation there. It's trying to take the faces completely off of these. So it's not about the person, and that's what I would tell the board on any policy you're looking at. Don't look at the person. Don't look at personalities. Don't look at any of that. Strictly look at policy. Strictly look at how this is going to be equitable amongst everybody, because if your buddy gets treated differently than the guy you don't like, we've got a major problem. I want to make sure however we deal with everything is completely the same across the county. And between departments, that's hard. But even amongst departments, we try to be as flat and as fair as possible. Sometimes that looks like a lack of appreciation or I guess that's my fear. Sometimes that looks like a lack of appreciation, and that is not the goal whatsoever.
Sure. And I guess ultimately, I guess I'll ask the question, and I don't want to get ahead of the sheriff in asking this. This and this claim alone, I guess, what are the options, or where do we have as far as can there be further discussion in the committee prior to the next board meeting where this claim is reconsidered? Or?
Once I put my name on something, it is final, and there's no way to go back whatsoever. No, I'm just kidding, Doug.
Well, there is. It's in 23-135, but I don't think anybody wants to get to that point.
No, what I would suggest, if it's all right with you guys, is we bring it back with you and the sheriff. I would suggest we'll take it back to the – and I'll ask Gary, too. I guess he's our law enforcement chair. I would suggest sending it back to law enforcement or finance and insurance. We can talk about it again there. And you guys can be part of that conversation as far as that goes also. It's not very timely, it being a couple weeks again. But
I understand.
I mean,
that.
Can always back – we can always if it's a complete reversal, we can always backdate that, or not backdate it, but back pay it.
Right.
That would be my suggestion for additional discussion, is just throw it back. But I did like your face as I said that at first, like you jerk. No, would that be all right if we'd send it back to finance and insurance or law enforcement for additional discussion?
I think that's probably a good course of action.
Well, it brings up a good point.
If there's an issue with us once in a while, we try not to have it happen. Now, if Spencer's here, this might be something they might have to look at talking to us about somehow if we put something on there.
And I mean, you guys brought up Spencer's name. Could you backfill us in on what happened with him?
Can I make a suggestion? Maybe he could comment because he was there was a conversation, I'm going to say, some months back to where he was involved in a discussion with the sheriff. I think it ultimately led to a phone call to the clerk's office, and then there was some discussion about, you know, how that could be handled or something when it came time to paying vacation. So,
or is that a conversation for now, or would that be a conversation for when we're talking at finance and insurance?
I think it might. Well, I don't know. I think it's appropriate now and then, or that way at least the whole board has a background on, you know, what that was like and that type of thing.
And this will be personnel, so, I mean, this would be at your discretion to say anything also.
No one's making him talk. He came today just because he knew that this had an effect on him at one point, and he was, you know, prepared to shed light on it if he wanted to.
If you're all right talking, I wouldn't mind, just since we do have the full board here instead of a short number.
I only went over an hour and a half or a couple hours, and I think mine was denied too, which a couple hours wasn't too big a deal. But I talked to the sheriff about it, and we called Don in his office, and I was told I could sell 30 to 40 hours of vacation, and that would be okay, so I wouldn't go over without having to take time off.
Is that the policy we generally take? Is we,
I don't recall with that. I don't.
Did the clerk's office tell you that, or did
yeah?
Have you ever done that before?
The only time that I can remember is if it's extenuating circumstances. Like, I know there was a highway department where the superintendent was gone. That person couldn't leave when there was absolutely no other staff to cover. There has been some extenuating circumstances. That's
when we've been in between people, like in between supervisors. I know.
Yeah.
Well, that was the offer made to me.
And so, I mean, that one I don't remember. A lot of times I'll hear about him, and then I let the blame fall on the clerk. When you guys catch stuff, you know, they'll call. But I don't ever remember that one.
I'd have to go back and look at the paperwork because I can't remember.
But I mean, even that would be a discussion for policy change, where if there could be a buyout. It's just do we buy out or do we make people take the time off?
And if you can't take it off, you can't take it off. It's cheaper to pay.
It's definitely. It's cheaper to
10 or 12 hours than make somebody else come in and work for them.
It's absolutely cheaper than doing the overtime. It's just, do we force people to be gone and take time away from work, or do we?
Well, if you're paying the person and he's doing the job, and then you're paying him out, to say that that's cheaper than paying somebody overtime, I don't know that it is. You know, if that person continues to work, and then you're paying him for vacation hours that he's not taking because he's working.
So you're paying triple time, you're saying?
Yes. Earning more vacation time.
Correct.
I mean, that's the discussions we've had in your line of work, that you guys need the time off. Because the conversations also come up. People are taking off. Well, then they go work security. It's like, well, we're not getting any time away. Then you're actually working again somewhere else.
Right.
And not, I guess, mentally relaxing or whatever, fishing.
I just know that was what I was told that day.
Okay.
On the phone, so.
I'm not familiar with that policy. I'm sorry, Gary.
Sorry.
And I don't know about it.
So then your claim for 30 or 40 hours of buyout was denied then? Or?
No, I didn't. That was just offered to me, so I didn't have to keep taking one day off per month because I was maxed out.
Okay.
So then I would just take one day, but I'd earn 10.
So what were you denied on, Spencer?
I was only denied a couple hours. I went over on my max of 240.
Okay.
It wasn't
because you were
a lot of time.
You were denied vacation time.
Yeah. Yeah. I could use up to, I needed to burn, I think it was 10, because I was going to earn 10, and I could only get up to taking 8 hours off that last week or two.
You're bumping up just towards the real last.
I would have went over, but I was able to get very close to within a couple hours. So then I was denied the hour and a half, 2 hours that I went over. So it wasn't a super big deal to me. But
And in that case, you denied the vacation time for what?
Well, we sent it. Well, again, he was denied because couldn't get him off. Is that? I think that was that not after you maxed out? You brought that to his attention.
I was going to max out if I didn't take.
Right.
I was maxed. Time, yeah. So by the end of the month, I would have went over 10 hours.
That was right.
I was able to get up to 8 or 9 hours off.
We just didn't have a lot of time with him by the time he told us that. And honestly, I leave up to supervisors. I don't track their benefits because I got other things to worry about the way it is. You know, they should have a little ownership in themselves and say, hey, Sarge, I'm getting close, you know.
Agreed.
It's just, it happens, so.
It's a lot of those situations, you're darned if you do, you're darned if you stay at work, you're darned if you take the vacation. I would say this is probably a discussion we can have going forward. We've talked about this with the caps. We've been fairly rigid on the caps. A lot of organizations have backed those hours down. You guys are allowed 320 hours?
Is of 240. We're the same as everyone else.
Okay, so you guys are the same. I thought, for some reason, I thought you guys had an. Oh, you guys can bank? I was thinking there's additional hours you guys had, though. Do you?
Holiday hours. Yeah.
Okay, so you have banked holiday hours because you don't get regular holidays off like.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So that would be where the extra hours are. You can move those around some, possibly.
You could use them interchangeably, I guess you could say.
Okay. We've been fairly rigid on that just so that, those are liability hours, so that's the reason, plus for staffing purposes, the more that bank that you have or that allowable hour, it's tough. But I mean, come contract time, that's definitely something we can talk about. We've talked about going to all PTO throughout the county. I love that idea, but it changes. You know, right now there's sick days, holiday days, vacation days. There's so many different days that lessens the total number and puts it into a bank of any time PTO. We haven't seen a lot of favor with that so far.
Because it's not hour for
hour. Ms. Haxby. Yeah, it's not an hour for hour change.
I was just looking, we don't really have an action item on the agenda, and it sounds like this needs more discussion at our next committee meeting.
Definitely not an action item, correct.
So if we want to continue discussion, it sounds like we need to work through this a little bit more at a committee meeting.
We'll roll this committees. As far as this claim, we'll take it to finance, insurance, and law enforcement. With so many of you here, I hope everything's still safe outside.
You got you covered here. That's all we care about right now, right? Okay. Second claim, we denied. I had sent over. I actually initially sent a letter to the board April 14th of last year. That's when Sergeant Sharp was deployed over to Africa for about the year. And so to fill a void there, we promoted Tim Hanson to sergeant. And since then, at that time, the idea was once Sharp's back, he'd go back to be strictly an investigator. Well, what happened between then and now, legislature passed LB 51, which I've talked about this endlessly before. All the different audits we have to do, we had three already since the first of the year. Policies, we got to be accredited. It's just training hours have increased, got to keep track of all that. It just was just too much. And so Tim stepped up and has been helping with that through this process till Sharp come back. And that's why I have Spencer today, too, because he's one of the deputies that Tim supervises, day shift guys. It has certainly made a difference for us in the office. I can see it myself personally because I got somebody I can ask something they'll know right away. If I have to go to Chief, he won't know. He'll have to spend some time researching that because he's not the immediate supervisor. And so Tim stepped up. He's done just an outstanding job for me. He's in charge of a lot of different things as well. And he took this on, and I've got a goal set to try to get some of this training done before the middle of the year so we don't have to worry about cramming it towards the last of the year. And so there wasn't a lot of discussion on this. I had also said when I put that letter over, and then I've been back a few times since, that the intent would be temporary, like I said. And it's just, I can see this is too much of a benefit for the office the way it is right now. And I'll have them speak to that as well. But I do want to keep him a sergeant. I know that's different on the pay. I'd have to take a look and see if I can make some difference somewhere else. One of the things I talked about to Spencer, he thought it was possibly a very good idea, and we talked to the union, he was in favor of it. He said I'd start looking to see if we could agree on cutting back on the drive time for overtime for going to training. A lot of agencies don't pay for that drive time. That would be a significant amount of money for us in a year time saved, which would go towards just besides this here, because we're only talking about 2,080 hours at $1 an hour is the increase for him, but for some equipment or training, whatever else. It's just something I threw out there to look at. I do want to have, if Chief wants to segue into this,
it's $3.
On some of this here and tell you, I am supportive of this, and I want you to understand how valuable that is to us the way it is right now. So I'll have Chief come right now, if you would.
Well, being very sure he said his name, I guess we already know who we're talking about. Yeah, the background, as he described that, is when Sergeant Sharp was on deployment. So that was on 4/14 of 21, during that absence for the military deployment, that Hansen was promoted to sergeant. So that kicks in a few different things. So as the current roles and duties that he has, he supervises 4 day shift deputies, and at that time he was also supervising 2 night shift deputies that were without a sergeant during Sergeant Sharp's absence. And he served as primary point of contact. He is currently and was then available during nights and days off for the whole road patrol. So when somebody gets promoted, it kicks in a couple things. So obviously, yes, pay is one of those, and that goes by the step plan and stuff that we have set forth in the contract, obviously. The other thing that it kicks in is a change in their duties and responsibilities, and additionally, it also is mandated that we fill out within 7 days a change in status report that is submitted to the Law Enforcement Training Center. So anytime there's a change in rank or status, that we have to submit that. So then he is listed with the Academy as a sergeant. And so one of the things or the reasons that comes as a result of that is they have to, if they haven't at the current time already been, they have to attend a supervision school. Well, Sergeant Hansen has both been to supervision school and management school, so he more than qualifies for that role. When, as Sheriff touched about, a little bit of LB 51 came into play, so that was even before the end of the year. We knew it was coming, and we had to quickly scramble to get some things done with that. There are many mandates and audits that we have to comply with, you know, for different training topics and tracking the hours, and we were audited for last year for, I think it was 4 of our deputies for the mandated training hours and in compliance with firearms and the mandating training hour requirement that we had then. And then it also deals with a couple other mandated training topics that they have set forth a set number of hours. So with that being said, you know, so we moved into a restructuring of our entire operational structure. And so with that being said, you know, what it does then is, and I can pass this around, this will give you a brief overview of what our operational structure looks like. You know, obviously we are a quasi-military operation here, and we have a chain of command, a rank, and a structure, and we have those people in those positions for certain, very certain and specific reasons. So with that being said, you know, he's tasked with day-to-day supervision of 4 road patrol deputies. He's our immediate supervisor. He ensures the daily duties are completed and provides guidance to the deputies and ensures a successful shift. So that operational sheet that I referred to there is how that all lays out. So some of the day shift deputies' thoughts and opinions. So having Sergeant Hansen in that role has proven to be highly effective. He covers many shifts, so he saves the county and the sheriff's budget many, many dollars. Sir?
I'm going to interrupt you. I'd ask for a motion to go into closed session necessary for the protection of the public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual at 10:09 on the clock for personnel discussion.
Second.
Motion to approve.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Second by Haxby. Any discussion on this? No action will be taken in or after this closed session. This will be for discussion of personnel only. Please vote. 6 in favor. We're in closed session at 10:10.
There'll be action after that.
Okay.
Motion by Dorn, second by Schuler. Come out of closed session at 10:36. Any discussion? Please vote. 6 in favor. We're in open session at 10:36 on the clock.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chief.
We're good.
Up next, discussion on the rate for the abandoned cemetery contracts. Our current cemetery, come on up. I'll let you go first.
Okay.
Sorry for the wait. I apologize.
Yeah, I apologize. My hearing isn't very good. My hearing aids aren't working very good today, so please bear with me. But I'm Mark Willoughby. I'm a retired soil scientist for NRCS, and I'm the mower coordinator for the Boy Scout Troop 221. And we have a contract with the county to take care of 11 abandoned cemeteries around the county. And I'm here today because we haven't had a raise in that rate in over 10 years. And the expenses of our troop have just keep going up and up. The cost of sending boys to camp and awards and just the general operation of the troop, those costs have gone up a lot over the last 10 years. And we use the funds for summer campouts, advancements, and troop equipment. And if we could get some kind of an increase, would surely be nice.
Mark, what have you been being paid now?
$500 a cemetery.
Didn't we discuss this before at a previous meeting, but we didn't take any action on it?
We talked about it at budget time, actually at contract time. They're currently at $500 a cemetery. The state, that was by statute. The statute increased the ability to go up to $1,000. We talked about increasing that to $750 on our next round of contracts. We didn't do that this time. And we have 13 cemeteries?
No.
15?
We've got 15 or
15 cemeteries. All the contracts went out at $500.
How many?
Thought we agreed to bump that.
No, what you guys said was to wait until the next round of contracts because everyone had signed their contract in February, turned it in. We approved it. This was after that, and so you said you wanted to wait.
Mr. Lytle?
Why?
I thought we did, too.
How long has it been at 500?
We talked about doing it.
Well, I became coordinator about 10 years ago, and we haven't had anything for a minimum of 10 years.
I was thinking it was 8 for some reason, but it could have been 12. I mean, I have no idea for
sure. So the contract that was just done in February, is that for a year?
Or 1 year.
Is it just one year?
Yeah. Each year they have to...
I think we have four vendors that do the cemeteries. The lion's share comes from the Boy Scouts.
I had Jim Barr spoke to me about it also. He must do one down by Liberty or someplace in that area. And someone else, and I guess I misspoke then because I had stated that I thought the state set up to 1,000, being they hadn't had a bump in 10 years, I thought it was appropriate to do the $1,000. Because if you look at that, if you're going to keep it looking neat, you got to be out there for sure every 2 weeks, okay?
But you only mow them 3 times a year?
The minimum is 5 times.
5 times, I'm sorry.
But years, you know, when we get a lot of rain, you know, sometimes we're out there 7, 8, 9 times during the season.
Ms. Haxby?
I was just wondering if we can go back and adjust that.
What we would have to do, we'd make an addendum to the contract. We'd have to send it out to each of the vendors, have both sides agree. Nobody's going to turn down more money. But that, since there is an annual contract on that now, that's what we would have to do. Is not an addendum. We'd have to make an amendment to the contract and send out an amendment to each of the vendors. I think there's 4 vendors, or 5 maybe.
I'd have to look. I don't know.
If we were at $750 a year, if they were doing them 8 times a year, that's $93.75 a mowing. If you had contract labor doing it, it'd be higher than that.
If this made money, I'd be doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. So
Here's my theory.
A lot of labor
that
in
is important to me because I'm getting close to being planted in one of them. So, I would say we would go to that $1,000 level because this might not be addressed for a while again. You got gas prices, you got everything has increased tremendously, and their cost also have to.
A huge amount of labor on a cemetery.
So if we can change it, I'd like to change it to $1,000.
Whatever you got to do, Don. Wait for the next contract.
No, change it now. We can't wait for another year.
That would be an agenda item in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
However you got to do it.
It's an action item. So.
Is that what you guys want that on the agenda in 2 weeks?
I'm fine. I agree with Terry.
Yep. I agree.
I thought we were good to wait until the next contract year, but obviously we're not. So,
Don, would you put that on the agenda for 2 weeks? Discussion, approve or disapprove, dollar amount increase to all cemetery contracts, or a dollar amount, approve or disapprove, increasing cemetery contracts by amendment?
On top of the fact, Eric, I've seen him shoot for a lot of years. I don't like your chances.
Mowing cemeteries, though, in all seriousness, probably the most labor-intensive thing you could mow. I mean, it's just all the trimming, all the headstones, the care around headstones that are hundreds of years old, not to mention the repairs you guys make to the headstones while you're out there setting things back up.
There's gravestones out there that people are Civil War veterans that are buried in Gage County. And we pick up trees, limbs that come down, keep the fences up, and really there's more to it than just mowing.
Absolutely.
Fixes the signs.
County.
The cemetery signs, who fixes them?
Pardon?
Cemetery signs, Mark.
Yes.
Cemetery signs.
We keep up the cemetery signs.
There's, in my area, there's one broke.
See,
is it on an abandoned cemetery?
Yeah.
If you come to our meeting, you get complaints like we do, especially from Eddie.
Okay. Which one is it? Here, I've got a map of.
It's by the dog catcher.
I'd say let's put it on the agenda for 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks. Okay. We'll make a dollar amount.
Sunny Slope.
Which one?
Sunny Slope.
It's on the agenda in 2 weeks.
I know that needs
approve or disapprove, dollar amount change to contracts by amendment. We'll have to send it out. We'll have to get an amendment signed by each of the contractors.
I don't think they'll have a problem with that.
If they don't send it back, we can't pay them. If you get an amendment, sign it, send it back, and it'll change.
Okay. So, all righty.
Well, you had a lot easier than the sheriff did today.
So. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Sorry for your wait. Anything else for the good of the order? We're joined by Senator Dorn. Of the great city of Adams.
Now we're going to adjourn.
Anything? If not, I'd ask for a motion to adjourn at 10:43.
But aren't we going to make him speak?
Anything for us, Senator?
Nothing, no.
Keeping it beautiful?
So moved.
See you, Mark.
Second.
Moved by Dorn, second by Haxby to adjourn at 10:43 on the clock. Please vote. 6 in favor. We are adjourned at 10:43.